It all came to be because my mother died fairly suddenly at the end of 2019 on Boxing Day. Thanks, Mum. And after that time, I just was overwhelmed, as I'm sure anybody who's had gone through grief of any description knows, that sense of just being utterly overwhelmed by feeling.
Yeah.
And I was overwhelmed by feelings that I wasn't expecting, even though my mother's death wasn't entirely unexpected in that she'd been unwell for quite some time. I wasn't prepared for what came up as a result of that. And because I'm a writer, I started thinking about trying to form that mass of swirling ickiness into some kind of narrative. So that's really where it started.
Yeah, and the book opens with this beautiful anecdote of your late mother at a party, and she is taking a photo inside a coffin. It's like obviously one that's been created for a party, but it's just this wonderful, incredibly astute moment that kind of sets the book up. And there's a wonderful, yeah, I haven't finished, admittedly. I was just saying to you off mic that I think I'm trying to hold on to this book as long as possible. But I believe that is a thread that runs throughout the book as well.
It is. So Mum was at a party, which was one of her signature things to do. And it was a party held by a previous boyfriend of hers who happened to be an undertaker.
Which is just the irony there is brilliant.
So there's this photo of her lying in the coffin, and it is surrounded by flowers in beer bottles. And, you know, it's very, very kind of 80s, 90s bogan kind of party. And so, and I thought it was actually a photo that summed up Mum's sense of fun, and because she was a bit of a wild child in the day, and it was a nice and we did laugh about it, because I was saying to her on her deathbed, so remember your boyfriend, you know, that undertaker guy? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, can he do your funeral? And she's like, nah, he's dead. So it was a good anecdote to start with, I felt.
It's just perfect. I agree, because it really does capture the wonderful sense of humour that is within this book, but also the power that you speak of life, of death, sexuality, relationships, all of it is covered in this book. There really is something for everyone. The title, How to Avoid a Happy Life, you'd be forgiven for believing it was a self-help book, but it's anything but that. Did you ever think about that genre as you were writing this, or, I don't know, perhaps trying to subvert that idea of this, like, this is the formula to a perfect life?
Oh, absolutely. I have a tricky relationship to self-help books, because sometimes I really love them and find them valuable, but I think trying to find a way through life via self-help books is a little bit challenging, particularly if you've had a life that's like mine, or, you know, if you've got some like significant trauma, they're probably not going to do it for you. So I really did want to have an ironic take on that. So, you know, there's plenty of books to tell you what to do. I'm telling you what not to do if you want to have a happy life.
Which I just love. There's so much heart in this book, despite that, you know, it's not you know, crass or undermining or in no way patronising to the reader. It's just a wonderfully universal story about everything, relationships in particular, which, you know, you've spent a lot of your career fictionalising. You've, up until this point, been a writer of children's books. But I imagine that this sort of writing allowed you a little bit more freedom than writing for little people. How did it change your approach?
It really is very different because, A, it's the first thing that I've written that is non-fiction. So it's very different. Although, as my mentor, Howard Norman, told me, writing a memoir still uses all the techniques that you need in fiction. So you've got to set your scene and create your characters and have an arc and all those kinds of things. But it requires something quite different of you. And also, it being for adults was very different. It was quite liberating because I could use whatever language I wanted to. I didn't have to make anything more simple than it was. And because it does cover some fairly complex ideas, I guess, and complex experiences, it was really nice to just be able to let rip in a writing sense. You know, I could I could just write and know that my audience would be able to come with me with that. And in terms of the other thing that's really different is having to be brutally honest with oneself. So when you're writing fiction, it's that one remove from you. So you're creating something that's self-contained, but this actually intersects with me and my life. And it's not a warts and all. So it doesn't go into everything. It's a memoir in that it selects things that have happened and explores them. But I needed to be brutally honest with myself about my own motivations, and I really had to dig deep to find out what some of those were, because when I was writing, it wasn't always obvious to me why I did some things. In fact, that was one of the things I kept on saying to my mentor, but why did I do that? And he said, well, that's your task. You need to really find out why and find the thread from the child that you were to the adult you became. And that was really the task of the book.
Yeah, it's such a fascinating process. And as we know, trauma does warp memory. So that would have been a really insightful kind of process to go through. I'm wondering how, because you did speak about, you know, having to be brutally honest as it is a memoir, but how do you balance needing to be honest to tell the story, but then also give yourself a bit of leeway and let yourself off the hook in terms of, well, this is a big, vulnerable part of my life. How do you balance those two things?
With great care. So what I did was I tried to be kind to my younger self. I was very conscious of, like, Hannah Gadsby's approach to comedy. I didn't want to make myself the butt of the joke, but because of some of the dumb stuff I did, I did have to also be able to tell it, again, with that ironic slant. So I tried to be kind to my younger self and kind to the other people who interacted with me and my younger self particularly, without letting myself off the hook for some of the things that I did that weren't great, because, you know, I'm human and I've done some things that aren't great, and that's just the way of it. So so I also revisited all my old diaries, and so that was one of the ways of keeping myself accountable, was going back and reading my diaries and going, no, this was how you're feeling, not what not what I was superimposing onto things.
Sure.
And it was a bit tricky sometimes reading back on those things and, you know, cringing, just going,
I can imagine being there. Yeah. Oh, so funny. I think, you know, you do hold everyone in this book, no matter what they've done, with incredible compassion. And there's also just so much humour, and I think the ironic take on things is just so wonderful and compelling. Was humour a choice you decided to, was using humour, I should say, an approach you decided to make on purpose? And why do you think it's such a good vehicle for storytelling, particularly memoir?
Probably being Australian, I just don't take myself that seriously. So I felt that I needed to have that humorous line running through to stop it from getting mired in some of the stuff that is more serious. Again, I didn't want to minimise my experiences, and I didn't want to minimise some of the terrible stuff that's happened to some of the people around me and to myself. But it needed to be balanced with humour, I think. I always prefer reading memoirs that make me laugh.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that I have done that service for other people that are reading it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely has. You've alluded to that there is lots of heavy stuff in here, and it is a memoir, you know, about your life and perhaps the not-so-great decisions that you have made. Mm-hmm. I know it would have been really hard at times, but was there some really fun stuff that you enjoyed writing? What was the, I guess, your favourite bit about kind of unpacking your past and putting on the page?
I enjoyed reflecting on the weird things that happened that were serendipitous. You know, I was really lucky, for example, to have joined a comedy group in my 20s, and had I not had a horse riding accident, for example, that wouldn't have happened. I ended up having some amazingly interesting jobs in Parliament and being a speechwriter and doing all sorts of other things. And, you know, for a bogan chick from Kelmscott, you know, they weren't things that I ever thought would happen. You know, going on a secondment to the House of Commons in the UK for 3 weeks was an experience that most people don't get to have. And
yeah,
I was very conscious at the time when it was happening that I was enormously privileged to get a little window into this world that really governs the way that we govern, you know.
Yeah.
And so it was nice looking back on all those unexpected little bits of joy. And also ABBA. So
gosh, absolutely. And I will discuss in a moment, there are lots of different ways in which you can engage with the memoir. If perhaps you're not keen on sitting down and reading the book, there is a podcast. There's also a playlist as well. But before we do get into that sort of fun stuff, one thing that I did think was really pertinent was the women in your story in particular, and how vulnerable they were at times and the precarious situations that they found themselves in. There's a situation where you're hitchhiking, which as a 26-year-old, like, I could never fathom doing that now. And there's also, you know, a run-in with a serial killer, all of these really kind of absurd scenarios, and that's only just scraping the surface. But I think given what's been happening in the country, I just think it's really interesting that we're still having these conversations. Do you think, big question, but has anything changed? Do you think we are better off now than we were when you were growing up?
I do think we are. Most, and not everybody, but I think on the whole, I think we are, mainly because we're talking about it. And I think the more we talk and the more action we take, the more things will change. But I think actually articulating how things happen and why they happen and why girls in particular are set up to be victims of predatory men, and actually understanding how that mechanism works. So that whole idea of grooming, I'm sure it was around, but I didn't hear about it. And I think that's one of the incredible things that's happened over the last 30 years or so, is that gradually we've got more and more language to talk about these things. And that is a way of recognising and of acting on it. It's not perfect. We've got a long way to go, but it's something. The most painful part to write was really about my husband and how controlling he was of me and my daughter. And I think if I had had, for instance, the language of coercive control, that really would have helped me out, because my issue was that he didn't hit me. He threw things, he broke plates, he yelled, he did various things, but he never hit me. And so to me, that was the line of, oh, well, this isn't domestic violence, therefore I've got no reason to complain. And had I had different language, I would have made different choices.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for sharing those experiences. It is just one experience in many across the country that is contributing to a really important conversation. So thank you, Julia. This book is about many things, and in it you also reconcile with your younger self and the woman that little girl has become. What would you like to tell the younger Julia if you ran into her today?
I would give her a big hug and say, it's going to be okay. Because it is, you know, it's not always easy. And some days are really hard, but mostly it's okay.
That's an excellent reminder for everyone out there, I think, and a beautiful way to leave it. Thank you so much for visiting us at RTRFM and chatting about your wonderful new book. I do want to take the opportunity to say that this is a wonderful locally published story, and I really encourage everyone to pick it up and give it a go. There's truly something in it for everyone, and a really good reminder that you really don't know anyone's story until you kind of open the pages of something like this. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Danny.